literary trip that Franny and Harold took, and Stu Redmond's Odyssey, and The Loneliness of Nick Andros. I remember that the fourth time I read the novel, I cried at the end, when I realized the folks in Boulder had named a massive rock in memory of the stalwart Ralph Brentner. I remember beginning to understand redemption at that tender age thanks to Larry Underwood, and so much more. People always talk about their favorite films and their favorite books, and many people change what gets the top spot on their list over the years. The Stand has been my favorite novel for 44 years as of this writing. It carved paths in my imagination that no amount of time's erosion can ever wear away. I've often said that Stephen King was the narrative voice of my youth, that when I think back on my childhood, the tone of those memories is colored by his storytelling style. That's certainly true, and so many of his stories and novels have stayed with me all my life and are part of my personal story. But The Stand is my desert island book. Readers don't simply turn the pages. We inhabit the story. And I knew if I felt that way, a lot of other writers must as well. I was contemplating my visceral connection to the novel one day, and I had one of those "wouldn't it be cool if" moments. Author Brian Keene and I had recently put together an anthology of stories set in the world of Joe R. Lansdale's shocking milestone horror novel, The Drive-In, and I'd insisted it would be the last anthology I would edit. I'd said the same thing about the one I edited before that, so Brian didn't believe me anyway. We started our careers in different corners of the horror world, but over the years, Brian and I have become brothers. We were born the same year, so most of the films, comics, television series, and most important, fiction that forged our imaginations hit us at the same time. We've played the role of sounding board in each other's lives for some years now, not to mention the role of SWAT officer talking the guy off the ledge. So trust me when I say, I knew The Stand meant just as much to Brian as it does to me. I called him, told him the idea, said I figured Stephen King would never go for it, but that it never hurts to ask. Brian was of the same opinion, so I sent that email. When Stephen gave us the thumbs up, I stared at the response for a minute. Surprise and elation were the obvious reactions, and yeah, I had a massive grin on my face as names of authors instantly started popping into my head. But I was also terrified. What if we fucked it up? What if we went through this whole process and the narrative voice of my youth was disappointed in us? Holy shit. The only way to combat that fear was to stack the deck in our favor by recruiting a roster of contributors we knew shared our love for The Stand and deep respect for its author. I'm not going to name check the 36 authors in this volume, but I will say that they delivered everything we'd hoped for. Stories from around the world and beyond it. Tales that expanded our understanding of the few weeks surrounding the devastating spread of the Captain Tripp superflu, examined the influence of Mother Abigail and Randall Flagg, and postulated about the landscape that remained after readers turned the final page of Stephen King's masterpiece. Brian will have his own words to share when you've reached the end of this book, but I know I speak for us both when I say we are profoundly honored to have been able to bring this collection to our fellow Constant readers. We're forever grateful to Stephen King for his blessing this project and for his support. If listeners feel themselves immersed in the world of The Stand once again, inhabiting that harrowing world the way my imagination still does, then we will consider our mission accomplished. Introduction. Stephen King. Although the unabridged version of The Stand concludes with Randall Flagg, an epilogue meant to show that life is a wheel and evil always comes around again, the original published version ends, as it began, with Stu Redman and Franny Goldsmith. "Franny," he said, and turned her around so he could look into her eyes. "What, Stuart? Do you think people ever learn anything?" She opened her mouth to speak, hesitated, fell silent. The kerosene lamp flickered. Her eyes seemed very blue. "I don't know," she said at last. She seemed unpleased with her answer. She struggled to say something more, to illuminate her first response, and could only say it again. "I don't know." It wasn't Franny who was unpleased. It was me.